Did music and art come at the same time? Did one beget the other? What happened there?
I actually thought I was going to be a painter before I even started playing music. So I was drawing since I think I was like 18 months old. My mom said she'd hand me paper and pens and whatever, and I would just draw all the time. So it wasn't until maybe sometime in high school that I decided that I wanted to have a career in music.
Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is pedal steel, fiddle, and viola player Andrea Witt. Andrea has toured with Shania Twain, recorded on Grammy Award-winning albums, and has performed and recorded with dozens of other musicians, including Journey, Deep Purple, Stevie Wonder, John Legend, Halsey, and Phil Lesh. An accomplished visual artist, Andrea is regularly commissioned for paintings in her signature ink, watercolor, and oil styles, and her work can be found on her Boho Bunny site. She's also a versatile arranger and composer and was commissioned to write two pieces for the International Viola Congress, and she still continues to instruct young string players in improvisation and multi-genre performances. During the interview, we talked about how she became a pedal steel player, how fiddle and pedal steel play a similar role in a band, how she developed her unique painting style, keeping her art life and music life separate, going from Brazilian jazz to EDM to country music, and much more. I spoke with Andrea via Zoom from a home in Los Angeles. Okay, here's where I want to start. How does someone who studied classical violin, classical viola, suddenly become a pedal steel player?
That's a great question, especially because when I was younger, I never listened to country music. I think that was like the one genre that I just refused to listen to. I grew up in Ohio and, there's kind of a lot of that going on. I was like, I'm just not into that. I'm into like the grunge and everything else going on. So classical viola kind of morphed into studying jazz in college. So I was, doing a lot of jazz studies along with my classical studies and playing in different jazz ensembles. So that was my first introduction to improvisation. And from there, I started playing rock music and improvising in rock styles when I moved to Los Angeles. Then I got the job with Shania Twain on viola. And the musical director asked me if I played fiddle as well. And I was like, yeah, of course, but I didn't even own a violin. So I went out and I literally bought a violin the next day. I took fiddle lessons from some LA players and went to bluegrass jams and just tried to completely submerge myself in fiddle styles and country music, falling completely on my face, trying to do that before rehearsal started. And then, I started getting into fiddle and country music with Shania, and there's a pedal steel player in Shania Twain's band. So the first month of rehearsals we had in Las Vegas, and this was about 11 years ago, I just kept watching the pedal steel player in rehearsals. And I was like, I need to make those sounds. Like, I don't care about what's going on here. Like, this is fun and whatever, but like, that is what I really want to do. So I ordered a pedal steel off of eBay and I had it sent to my hotel room in Las Vegas and just started teaching myself. So.
Wow. And how long did it take you to get up to speed on it?
Let's see. So I got it at the end of the first Shania Twain run. So we had 3 months off. And all I did was practice pedal steel, and I transcribed a bunch of Jerry Garcia's playing from the Grateful Dead, Teach Your Children that he did with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and then a bunch of stuff off of Working Man's Dead. So Sugar Magnolia and Dire Wolf. I like desperately wanted to learn the solo on Dire Wolf. So that 3 month break I had with Shania Twain, all I did was sit at the pedal steel, and I came back to rehearsals for the next run. And everyone was going on a lunch break. And I asked the steel player in the band, I was like, hey, can I, like, while you guys are eating, I just want to like sit at your steel and kind of noodle around on it. And I was just like in the zone. I think I skipped lunch that day, because I'm so obsessed with this instrument. And I didn't realize everyone had come back into the room after lunch. And I like look up and everyone's just looking at me and they just give me like this huge round of applause. They're like, You have been so incredibly productive in these last 3 months. Everyone's like, we did nothing. Like, what were you doing? I was like, oh, that's so, yeah. I spent like 4 to 6 hours a day on that instrument for, you know, really long time. And if I'm not working, I will definitely try to put in a good 4 hours of practice on that. But the first time I started playing live was about 3 years into playing pedal steel.
So you just found that it worked for you.
It did. Yeah. It just spoke to me. I couldn't escape it. And I had never seen one in person before. And I heard the sounds my whole life, but I had no idea where it came from. I, like, didn't even dawn on me to research, like, what instrument is making those sounds? I was like, oh, that's just part of the Grateful Dead sound, or, you know, whatever. So
yeah. Was there any correlation between viola and fiddle and pedal steel that you could make, besides you're making music out of both of them? But was there's like, oh, okay, I can relate because it's like this or like that. Is there anything like that that happened?
Totally. Yeah. They kind of play similar roles in a band setting. So if I'm playing fiddle or pedal steel, and sometimes viola, I don't play viola as much when I'm playing like in a band setting, just because fiddle has a higher register and it cuts more and you can play faster licks on it. But you do typically play, you know, fills, pads, and solos. It's kind of the role of both instruments. So yeah, sometimes I'll hear like a fiddle fill and I'm like, I wonder how I could make that into a pedal steel fill, and vice versa. You know, I'll play something that I typically play on pedal steel and I'll put it on fiddle and see if it, you know, the same kind of thing will work.
I can see how the fiddle would translate. Well, yeah, it'd be easier to translate what you're playing on steel to the fiddle, but
yes,
going the other way around, it's harder, I would think, because it's a slower instrument to play.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, I can rip faster and harder on fiddle. You know, I'm getting there on steel. But yeah, you know, fiddle's more of like a linear instrument and pedal steel comes from more of like a chordal bass. So yeah, it's like if I'm playing a steel lick on fiddle, you know, it normally involves double stops of some sort.
Okay, so you grew up in Ohio and you went to the University of Cincinnati and you studied classical viola.
Yes.
And what was it like to make the jump into improvisation?
Oh, I mean, it was completely terrifying. I took my first jazz class. I think it was a freshman in college. Well, it was actually before I transferred to Cincinnati. So I was at Ohio State for a couple of years. And then I decided to go to a conservatory after that. That's another story. I was like a double major in drawing and painting and music. So I was giving myself a lot of stuff to do. So that first semester I was in college, a lot of my friends were, you know, taking jazz studies, and I would go out to their, you know, apartment or whatever. And we'd, you know, play. They put on like a Jamie Abersole track, you know, like the first one where there's like an F blues and a B flat blues and like Maiden Voyage and some basic jazz standards. And they're like, play along with the track. And I'm like, what do you mean? What do I play? And they're like, just play anything. And I remember standing there and I'm like, I don't even know what anything means. And they're like, play the note F. I'm like, which F? You know, it's just like that whole mindset coming from just like reading notes on a page. I mean, that's how I started. I started with music in front of me and viola in hand at the same time. So nothing came. I didn't learn anything by ear. It all came from music. I mean, I listened to music to, you know, make that connection, but everything was just visual. So it took a while to really understand, like, okay, now I'll build a vocabulary of licks to play. And this is a scale I could use playing over this chord. So it, you know, it was pretty terrifying at first.
Okay, so let's just go back to when you're only reading music.
Yeah.
And so you're a reader, and then when you listen to music, were you listening for articulations or dynamics, or was there something specific that you're listening to, or are you just taking it in and not thinking about it?
Yeah, when I was listening to music, you know, when I'm studying music, like the sheet music that I was reading and studying it by listening to it, I was listening more to like phrasing and you know, and which includes dynamics and, you know, also intonation, because, you know, learning a fretless instrument at a young age, you know, sometimes you're going for a note, which you think is right, but it's completely wrong. So my teacher would be like, you have to listen to this recording. You're playing wrong notes. So yeah, it was kind of all of the above. Just listen for, you know, for learning for all of that.
I read somewhere that you, I think, broke into improvisation with the Brazilian Jazz Ensemble.
Yes. Yeah, that was so fun. I played a lot of Brazilian jazz in college.
How did that come to pass? And okay, this is in Ohio.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't think Brazilian jazz would be a thing there.
A thing at all. So I had a teacher, Phil DeGreg. He was the jazz piano teacher at Cincinnati. And I took, you know, private jazz lessons from him on viola, and he directed the Brazilian Jazz Combo, and he would go to Brazil every year and bring back all these charts, and he'd like work with a bunch of different artists in Brazil. And so, you know, I would hear this combo perform and I'd be like, oh, I want to play in that one. I mean, that music is just, it's so cool. And forever, like, the destination I wanted to travel to the most was Rio. And I finally got to go there on tour about 7 years ago and experience like the Brazilian music that I played like live in person. So that was really, really cool.
Was it different?
It was how I expected it. I mean, there's music everywhere. I mean, everyone's dancing in the clubs all night. I believe I went to the Blue Note in Rio. I think that was it. But even I went up to Christ the Redeemer and I sat under Christ the Redeemer and I was like doing a painting, and a whole Brazilian choir was there singing, you know, like the standard Brazilian like jazz music and stuff. I mean, it's just everything is dance and music down there. It's so beautiful.
So what I'm getting at is, so Americans playing Brazilian jazz would probably sound different than Brazilians playing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But I, you know, our instructor Phil did a really good job of like, you know, explaining like rhythmic structure and stuff. And yeah, I mean, we're students in college, so yeah. We're just trying everything out.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, let's talk about your artwork, which is phenomenal.
Thank you so much.
Such a great artist as well. And I'm wondering did music and art come at the same time? Did one beget the other? What happened there?
That's a great question. Yeah, I actually thought I was going to be a painter before I even started playing music. So I was drawing since I think I was like 18 months old. My mom said she'd hand me paper and pens and whatever, and I would just draw all the time. And it wasn't until, I don't know, maybe like in high school sometime after I'd started playing music when I was 9. So it wasn't until maybe sometime in high school that I decided that I wanted to do, you know, have a career in music, an official career. And I always wanted to do both, but, so I did double major for a second in college, but I figured, I always felt like since I've been doing art for such a, you know, a longer time since I was little, that it came a little bit more naturally to me. So I kind of wanted a little bit more training in music, and that's why I really focused on that in college.
So your style is truly your own.
Yes. Yeah. And what's so interesting is that I was going through literally bins of artwork that my mom has saved since I have first started drawing, since so little, and just little sketches, you know, this like on pieces of paper, like this big. And what's so crazy is that how I draw and paint is literally like the same thing I was doing since I was like 18 months old. I would have these like little drawings of like an animal or creature, like in the center of the page. And I still do a lot of that style of artwork to this day. Obviously it's like very evolved, but I was like, that's me. I see where this came from. And I had no idea until I saw those drawings just a couple years ago that my mom had kept.
How did you turn it into a business?
Commissions. I have done some collaborations for people. I've done some, you know, large painting collabs. It's kind of more like word of mouth as far as artwork goes. I definitely post more of my music stuff on my social media. I occasionally post art. But yeah, it's definitely more word of mouth. You know, people who know that I draw and paint, other musicians as well. I'll do commissions for artwork for them for, you know, like an album cover, or single release or poster or something.
I don't know if this is intentional and maybe I missed something, but when I was looking through your websites and everything and just following the links wherever they went, it seemed like your art life and your music life are pretty well separated.
Yeah, they kind of are. I think because, I mean, it just, it's so much work to, for both. It's so much dedication, especially, you know, for music, like I spend hours and hours practicing. I don't spend as much time on my drawing and painting as I do my music. And I do regularly go to drawing classes every week. I draw live nude models every week in a figure drawing class. But yeah, they are a little bit separated. And that's definitely something I want to work on more, bringing in more of my artwork and, you know, making it correlate with my music more. I do design all of my own merch for my music. And, you know, every design that you see on my websites for Steal Your Face Sundays or anything, any project I'm doing, it's something that I've designed.
There are 15 simple mix fixes that can instantly take your mixes from amateur to pro level. These are the secrets that the top engineers know that most musicians don't. That's what you'll find in my Mix Fix playbook. Head to go.bobbyosinski.com/mixfix to check it out now. That's totally unique and fantastic. I love it. Okay, so let's go back to your music career. The gig with Shania, then, the big break for you?
It was, yeah. That was the first big artist that I had played with in a setting that I was, you know, in the band. Before that, I'd played with a lot of artists, you know, on award shows or, you know, a TV appearance like Ellen or Jimmy Kimmel or something. But, you know, they'd be one-offs or a festival where you're just, you know, playing in a small string section. So I have played with dozens of amazing artists, but I haven't. The first time I got to work closely with an artist over an extended period of time was Shania.
Are you still in her band?
No, I was in her band for like 2.5 years. And we did the first residency in Las Vegas after she took like a 10-year break off. And that was her, you know, big comeback in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about when you're playing with a small ensemble and you're backing somebody, like you just mentioned, on a television show or a festival, or something like that. So what are you listening to? I'm assuming that you're getting in-ears. Mm-hmm. You have in-ears. What are you listening to primarily?
In our in-ear mix, like, yeah, if it's with a group setting, then, you know, the in-ear mix is typically like, you know, yourself louder than everyone else. And then the players around you, the string section, obviously the artists, whether it's an instrumentalist or a singer, like, you know, they're pretty hot in your ears. And then, you know, the track or the band as the whole. And that's very similar to, like, you know, when I'm playing in a band on stage. I've had some remarks though from in-ear monitor people. They're like, man, you are so loud in your own ears. Like, are you listening to anyone else? And I totally am. But because I play fretless instruments, I like to hear myself like super loud over everyone. So I can really hear the intonation and, you know, everything, the frequencies, all that stuff around my instruments.
I know that the trend is for synthesizers to basically emulate whatever the string arrangement was in the studio. And then to use a small string section to enhance it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that easier for you, or is that something that you like or don't like, or how does that land?
I mean, that does happen quite a bit. And, you know, that's obviously to, you know, to save costs in recording so that you don't have to hire a big section or, you know, pay people like triple scale because they've recorded three times to make your big orchestra. So it doesn't bother me. I mean, I'm just grateful for the fact that they are hiring live musicians on top of that. Because, you know, if it was just pure synth strings, you know, it's a lot of people can't tell, but when it's there, it does add such, you know, such a difference.
Yeah, there's a realism that you can't get out of the way. Well, because it is at least partially real.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. What is one thing that people don't know that you wish they did about what you do?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty open as far as sharing everything.
Is there a misconception, maybe?
You know what? I get a lot of times, I do interact, you know, with my fans a lot on social media, and, you know, I'll talk to them in person, and a lot of people, they're like surprised at how warm or how welcoming I am sometimes. You know, I love interacting with people and fans, and, you know, I'm so grateful for everyone. So sometimes maybe that catches people off guard, like, wow, you responded to my comment. Like, that's really cool. But, you know, if I have time, I will go through and, you know, read and reply. And, you know, I truly love the support and the engagement. So
is there something about your art that you wish people understood more?
I think it's more about me getting my art out a little bit more. Like you mentioned, you know, you kind of keep it separate. So yeah, in the perfect world, I would love to have a, you know, a bigger following with my art, but that does require me to share it a little bit more and, you know, to make it a little bit more known on my socials.
I'm in a mastermind group. With like 25 other people. And one woman was, she's recovering, had a problem, and she was a great artist, and she managed to build her business just through social, Instagram primarily, into $2 million a year just from her art, and it started from just one post.
Wow. How much did you say she brought in every year?
A couple, at least a couple mil. It's probably more now.
From one post?
No, she started with one post.
Wow. Just on social, she built that business up.
Just on social. And it's amazing. And her, the other thing that's amazing is her Instagram videos are very short. They're 10 to 15 seconds that she does. Mm-hmm. But she just knows how to pack the most into that very small stretch of time. And she's a great artist as well. So, I mean, that's a big part of it, but you have to let the world know.
Yes. You know? Yes. Please send me her information. I'd love to check her out. And I agree. Yeah. You do have to let the world know, but you know, it's like in the perfect world, when I get my team hired, who can help me like plug everything and share everything on social media. You know, it's tricky because we're creating as artists, we're creating all the time. We're, you know, I'm practicing a lot. I'm, you know, really, you know, trying to expand like everything I do artistically, whether it's painting or whether it's learning new stuff on pedal steel. I'm going in the studio tomorrow to record my first single where I'm singing on, like, you know, I'm evolving always as an artist. And, you know, how many hours a day do you have to spend to, like, you know, put this stuff on socials? And I know, like you said, your friend who just skyrocketed from that, from her art, like, you know, it definitely is important. So it is, it's tricky to find that balance, and, you know, and we want to live too. You like, we want to go out and have fun and see our friends and our family and go on trips and be able to travel. So
yeah,
like all the things.
I know it's a big problem because it takes time and effort, and it has to come from somewhere.
It does. Yeah. It has to come from me or for someone else. And if it's someone else, I have to, you know, help show them how I, you know, want it portrayed. So it's all, you know, a matter of balancing time.
I understand you're a big Deadhead.
Yes.
Was this kind of like recent in your life, or is this something that happened from when you're younger?
I was in middle school when I started listening to the Dead.
Wow.
And so I think my first CD was Working Man's Dead. And I ordered it off of when you could do those 12 CDs for a penny. and I would, you know, keep doing that and cancel. And like my parents wouldn't know. And I'd be squirreling away like dozens of CDs that they didn't know arrived at the house. I'd like get them out of the mailbox before they came home. So I listened to that CD like nonstop. And that's where I heard all the Pedal Steel, which I didn't even know was Pedal Steel. So that was my first introduction to the Dead. And, you know, growing up with like seeing all their visuals and like the dancing bears and like, you know, everyone was wearing the tie dyes and you know, it was just like kind of an all-inclusive, like, this is such a cool band. Like they have it all together, like their music and their art, everything that goes along with it. So yeah, I've been a fan since like 13, 14.
You haven't played with anybody from the Dead, have you?
I did play with Phil Lesh up when Terrapin Crossroads, when he had that club up north. And that was for Jay Blakesburg's book release party. And so Jay Blakesburg is, you know, one of the main photographers for the Grateful Dead, and he still shoots Dead and Company and, you know, a ton of other bands. So he released this book called Hippie Chick. And he had an all-female fronted band with the Terrapin Family House Band. I'm not a singer, so I'm instrumentalist. So I was, you know, part of the house band, and Phil Lesh sat in that night. So that was really special.
Okay. So you did get to play with,
go ahead.
You did get to play with somebody from the Dead then.
Yes, I have. I mean, obviously I'd like to play with Dead and Company or, you know, with more members. And it got pretty close. I was on the Dead and Company tour in 2019 with a friend of mine. We had a duo and we were traveling along with Steve Parrish, who is Jerry Garcia's guitar tech. And, you know, he has a show on Sirius XM. He's kind of made a name for himself with that. So for the VIP experience for the Dead and Company shows, Steve would tell these stories of, you know, being on the road with the Grateful Dead. And then me and my friend Katie, we would play, you know, a song that would correlate. Like he would tell the story of the song Cassidy. I don't know if he made up half these stories or not. Like, I'm not sure. Steve Parrish is, you know, he has the great gift of storytelling. So I don't know. I'm sure maybe it's 50-50 on like what was actually true. But there were fascinating stories. And, you know, that was, you know, really cool to be able to do that every night before the band played. And then we got to stand side stage every night watching Dead and Company. The one thing I wish happened, though, which it didn't, was a sit-in with Dead and Company, because I'm like, I have my Pedal Steel here.
Yeah.
I can play all the songs that require Pedal Steel. It just didn't happen on that run for whatever reason. So I'm sure it will down the line.
Yeah. What's your favorite type of music?
That's a great question. I don't know. I love all music. I mean, I listen to everything. Like I listen to a lot of jazz. I listen to a lot of Rolling Stones. Like that's kind of like, I can put on the Stones anytime. It's kind of feel like that's like a vibe for any situation. You know, I like a lot of stuff from the 90s. It was really nostalgic for me. Like I like shoegaze type music, like Mazzy Star and that dreamy stuff where, you know, it's, and it kind of suits the Pedal Steel. Because that's the direction I go with that. Country music, I play with a lot of country artists, and obviously fiddle and pedal steel, like that's, you know, that's where you hear those instruments the most. Yeah, so it's kind of all over the place. And then I'm going on tour with Moby in like 2 days, so it's been super fun to play along to these electronic dance tracks that he's made. I mean, they're iconic songs.
That's pretty 180 degrees away from country.
Totally. Yeah. I've literally like, I've hit every genre. And what's so crazy is like, I go on tour with Moby in 2 days. And then right after that, I get home and I go on tour with Struggle Jennings, who's Waylon Jennings' grandson. And that's pure outlaw country touring at its finest. And then, Moby is just the complete opposite side of the spectrum. He's vegan and animal rights activist. Yeah. And then Struggle, it's just like everything you would think, like, you know, kind of what happened back in the day with like Waylon and all that. Like we kind of relive that. So totally opposite. And I love both, you know, it's so fun to experience both worlds like that.
Oh, that makes for an interesting life. That's for sure.
Totally. Yeah. There's never a dull moment. What I'm so excited about the Moby tour too, is I'm vegan. So this is going to be my first time where I haven't submitted a rider, because I know everything is going to be taken care of. There's going to be vegan snacks, vegan catering, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like I'm set. Like that's the only reason I do riders, because I'm like, hummus, blueberries, kombucha, like give me all the vegan snacks so I can, you know, sneak them on the bus. And
Yeah, right. I'm a vegetarian, and I've never had a problem eating anywhere except Korea.
Really?
And the reason why is everything is pork-based. So it's, and it's hard to find a green vegetable in that whole peninsula.
There's just, no way.
Oh man, that was the toughest. Yeah.
I had no idea. That's crazy. Wow.
Me either. But I suffered for a while, for about a week on that, just trying to find something to eat. And everywhere else in the world is dead easy now. You know, you just don't have a problem.
Everywhere else. I had a hard time in Argentina.
Did you? Oh, well, yeah.
Very meat heavy. It's like meat and rice. That's it.
Yeah.
But yeah, everywhere else in the world, I feel like it. As a vegan, I've been to 52 countries as a vegan, and I never have an issue. I actually have more of an issue in the U.S., in certain parts of the U.S., than I do in other countries.
Down south, I bet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course.
We played this festival with Struggle Jennings, and it was so sweet. Like, I gave them an A for effort. They were like, okay, we have your vegan meal. And after the show, they were so excited to hand me this plate of food. They covered up, they kept it in the fridge all day. We were at this crazy outdoor festival, and they like revealed it to me. And it was a plate of strawberries and grapes and sliced tomatoes and some lettuce. And they were so weird. They were like, we looked up what vegan meant, and we have exactly what you need. And I was just like, I thank them so much. And it was so laid out like beautifully. I was like, this is the cutest vegan meal ever. Okay. Well, I was a little hungry that night, but I was very, very thankful.
Presentation counts for something, I guess.
Totally.
All right, Andrea, last question.
Yeah.
What's the best piece of advice that maybe you learned along the way, or maybe somebody imparted to you?
Actually, it's a recent advice from someone, and he always tells me when we get off the phone, go where you're loved. And I really love that, because, you know, it's like, don't force yourself into something, you know, if you think you're a fit, but maybe it's not like the right situation. Because if you go where you're loved, you know, everyone is there to support you. You're there to support everyone else. And it, you know, it just works, you know, magic that way.
I totally agree. And I've found that to be the case through my life as well. So there you go. There's affirmation.
Yes. Love that. Thank you.
Okay. Awesome. Take care.
Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Andrew. Bye. Okay. Bye.
Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. You can also learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news, and find out about openings for my latest online classes at bobbyosinski.com. This is Bobby Osinski. I'll see you next time.